What's up, everybody? Welcome to a Monday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio, not Indianapolis. Sad though it may be to be back from the combine. And what a combine it was. John Harris alongside Mark Vandermeer. Mark, good evening. How are you and how was your combine withdrawal this weekend?
It was fine. And I watched combine to get over the combine, if you will. I find it compelling. It's funny because it's one of those things, Johnny, where you're thinking, I'm not going to watch this. Yep. There's no way I'm hanging with this. 4 hours later, I'm still watching it. I don't know why. It is the underwear Olympics. Bill O'Brien said that it is. And people ask me, well, what's it like being in the bowl watching these workouts? You and I have been in the bowl to watch the workouts. And here it is, folks. It's easier on TV to follow this stuff.
That's true.
It's kind of like being at a track and field event. It's easier to watch track and field on TV. You get more information. You really know what you're looking at. The combine, when you're in the bowl, there's no PA guy usually to say, all right, and now running his 40 is Xavier Worthy. Let's see what he does. Yeah. Run number two. There's not that kind of thing going on, so it's a little bit more difficult to follow. Actually, track and field is easier. I was at Aggieland this weekend for Vanderkid's high school event.
Oh, wow.
And the announcer there, I don't know the guy's name. I'm sorry that I don't, but track and field people would know this guy. Apparently, he's a legend. He was phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal with a billion high school kids at this event. Anyway, go on.
So there have been a few things that have changed, I will say. One, they're allowing fans to go in. I think that helped the guys, to me, just the energy that brought. So that brought some energy. So there's that. The other thing was for all the years, so what they would do in the bowl is they would, if you've ever been to Lucas Oil, regardless, they have four corner video boards.
Yeah.
They don't have two big ones in the end zone. They have four in each corner. And so what they would do is they would run 40s, and the feed going through there would be the NFL Network feed, but it wouldn't have A, any sound, and B, no graphics.
So no time.
You had no idea what the times were. So
that sucks.
I usually would sit over with my buddy Fran Duffy from the Eagles, and he asked me, he said, hey, man, we're going to be over there by the broad and vertical watching and getting together again. I was like, nah, man, we're going back Thursday, so I'm going to miss all the on-field testings. Oh, we both look forward to that. And so that's where we go. We go to our sideline, and you get up in the stands. You can watch the broad jump, and you hear all the measurements. You can kind of look down and see some of the vertical, but you're looking right at the path of the 40. So you can see the guys going to the 40. So it'd be frustrating because you didn't know what anybody's time was. You had no clue.
Yeah.
The players didn't even know. The players would run and then be looking around going, what did I do? Well, they've changed that, and now they've got the feed in there. So when Xavier Worthy looked up and saw his 4-2-1,
He kept running.
He just freaked out because he got – so they made that change. So I think that's a big one. What I used to do was I have YouTube TV. So I would take YouTube TV and put it on my phone and have it on my phone.
Keep
and so I would put the combine on. Mm. I would see the live. I would actually time it with my stopwatch. And then I would see how close I was to what they got on TV. And so that's how I would know.
Are you a good timer? It's hard.
It's tough. It's really hard. It's a lot harder than you would think. But I would imagine if you have practice, if you're a scout and you've done it over and over and over again, you probably become more accustomed to it. But I remember there was one time when I was doing it and somebody, I can't remember, I think it was a defensive lineman. Defensive lineman ran an unbelievable time. I'm like, I got him at like 4.65. Is that for real? I just didn't believe it. He actually was better. It was like a 4.59. So I felt kind of good that I was on it. But that's how I used to do it. But now they've got the fans in the bowl and They've got the feed showing what the actual times are up on the video board. So I think that helps the guys. I think it makes it a lot better. And I'll be honest, Mark, I feel like that added juice to the event. The fact that the fans were there, you could hear Daniel Jeremiah and Rich Eisen, just the excitement that was coming forth from them. But you could see it on the players. And oh, by the way, Stacey Dales was really, really good. She was really good during the combine, adding in just different nuggets about each player. I caught up with this guy, this guy's ambidextrous, and she just had all these little nuggets to throw in there, which were kind of cool. So I didn't watch every, I should say this, I didn't watch every second. I had every second on.
Yeah.
I was doing work. I would look up, okay, who's running? Okay, it's this guy. All right. And I would go back to it. But I promise you, when Xavier Worthy, my son had popped out of his room, and he saw the combine was on, and so he was kind of asking me a few questions. He never watched a combine with me before, and I said, Jack, this guy right here, Xavier Worthy, I pointed out, I said, he just ran a 4.25, which might be the best time, one of the best times that's ever been at the combine. I said, oh, so he sat down and watched. When he ran a 4.21, like, Jack jumped off the couch like, yes, I got excited for him.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that was the power of that moment in right. that event.
It's the best event, too, it's at the
from
combine.
That perspective, yeah. You, yeah. I mean, seeing fast guys run really sure. fast is incredible.
You want to see how they do. Yeah. I mean, as opposed to the cone drill or whatever.
Now, you know I like all those drills.
I know you do. I know you do. Now, I wanted to ask you this, though, because, by the way, watching the gauntlet.
Oh, yeah.
I thought McConkey looked good in the gauntlet. Some guys look better than others in the gauntlet.
McConkey's smooth.
And Nick was telling us the gauntlet is actually a pretty good drill because you have to be aware. You got to turn quickly.
Right.
You know, good hands on the move.
Yep.
And I think you're only as good as your hands and mm-hmm. the guys throwing you the ball in time as well. Right. So that has to be there.
Did you see the tight end from Colorado State? His name, I always get it. It's Dalen. Holker.
I didn't see him. I didn't see him. What did he do?
He was going across. He got to the second to last throw. Now, the last throw is a catch and turn and go, right?
Yep.
So I don't know what happened, but on his second to last catch, he caught it. And I don't know if he was too close or I don't know, but he held on to it. So when the final guy throws, he's got one in one arm. He gets the last throw. He catches that one too. He catches both of them.
And runs.
And I'm like,
oh, I didn't miss.
Whoa. That is cool. Dalen Holker is his name from Colorado State. Really good athlete. Wait,
that was not intentional?
I don't think it was. Maybe that's it was. I don't know.
We're talking about it now.
I know.
That's how you get noticed.
That was really, really cool.
What about the quarterbacks throwing the deep
ball?
One
other thing about the gauntlet too, and this is interesting. They've now started timing the gauntlet. They didn't used to do that. So I bring that up because there's going to be a lot of talk about 40 times. Obviously, Xavier Worthy, the wide receivers ran out of their mind. McConkey ran a 4.39, and if you see McConkey, you'd be very surprised by that. But I would love McConkey here. I think 23 is just a little early. But
a lot of people would love McConkey.
I know. Yeah, exactly. So Keon Coleman from Florida State, who is one of the top receivers, unbelievable athlete, runs his 40. He runs 4.62. And everybody's like, oh. I mean, I kind of had the reaction to it at first, like, dang it. I wanted him to run better because I think Coleman's a heck of a player. And I had kind of been one like, no, I think his playmaking stands out. You know, I think he's got plenty of speed. Well, they timed the gauntlet. He did the gauntlet in 20 miles an hour. He reached a top speed of 20 miles an hour. He blew away all the other people, all the other receivers running the gauntlet. And so it was It was information that said, look, this is the 40 time, but this is what you're going to see with him on the field. Right. And I thought it was really cool that they started to do that. I think they did it last year, and they showed him going through the gauntlet, and it was like fly traps for hands. It was like, foop, 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 and he's just flying through. And I was like, that's – And I was glad that Daniel Jeremiah and Eisen talked about that because that was real representation of football. Flying, playing at a high rate of speed, making a catch, change of direction, whatever you got to do. It was really interesting that they timed that. So now you got to balance, okay, yeah, he ran 4.62, but the play speed shows up. And yes. I thought that was really, really interesting.
Well, and we always go back to Jerry Rice and Anquan Boldin and the guys who did not have good 40s. And by the way, Puka Nacua, 4.57 last year in the 40.
And you know what they showed of him? When they always do that during the combine. They'll show a drill, and then they'll show how it translates to the field. They were showing the gauntlet. And who did they show? Puka Nacua. That dude flew through it last year.
There you go.
Flew through it. And then if they show his clips from the Rams, crossing route, snatch, run, another crossing route, snatch it, run. Doesn't slow down, doesn't body catch it. It was the gauntlet drill, like, in its fullest form. It was really impressive to watch. But, yeah, it is definitely that. You get hung up on the 40s, and that's what I was doing this morning. I was going through, okay, Xavier Worthy. How often does Xavier Worthy from Texas play at a 4.21? This is great to be a 4.21, But how often do you play at that particular speed? And there are moments in a game where you get it.
How many catches did he have against Washington, Johnny?
Two. He had two. Okay. And Washington's secondary was 100-plus ranked in the country. And there are just moments he's not getting open. Mm. There are moments where it's kind of jogs through a route. So there are some things that go with that. You know, that, okay, he ran a 4-2-1, but is it every single play? Is that his play speed? Now, he's got, when he gets the ball in his hands, in my comp, I put it out there, he looks like Tank. He's so sudden and wiry, thin, small, however you want to call it. When he turns a corner, oh, my gosh, he looks like Tank.
All right, but turning the corner, you tell me, there are drills. I'll liken it to the rodeo, since we're in rodeo season right now.
Yep.
What rodeo event emphasizes quick turns and taking those turns properly, being ultimately timed? That would be barrel racing.
Barrel racing, yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying they should have the receivers do barrel racing, but the gauntlet, that's not quite there, but a sharp turn. Really fast guy, Will Fuller.
Right.
Will Fuller could turn on a dime, and that, in addition to the speed, made him great. Didn't have the best hands in the world. Had some drops. We all know that.
Right.
But, man, when he was on, forget about it. No one could cover him.
That's what Tank does well to me. That's different than Will in some sense. Tank will stop on a dime and give you a change and then catch the ball.
Yeah, he'll catch.
And then once he catches it, he gets 0 to 60 in a heartbeat. That's what Tank – I remember seeing it at the Senior Bowl up close. Like, he would run a route and stop on the route, hitch, whatever – curl, whatever, wherever he was stopping on the route, and you would just see DBs just, they would just fly by. Like, they couldn't stop at the same rate that he could. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it kind of taught me something about DBs. Because as I'm looking at DBs, I'm like, okay, what DBs are able to stop with receivers in that way, that they're under control, they can play at a high rate of speed, but then all of a sudden that receiver throttles down, he could throttle down too. There are a lot of, DBs just can't do that with Tank. I think Worthy's got some of that in him, too. So it's going to be interesting to watch this unfold. But, man, the University of Texas put on a show. Holy
smokes.
Yeah,
they did.
It was
an
unbelievable show. Adonai Mitchell was great. Xavier Worthy was incredible. The two big guys. I mean, Tavondre Sweat ran 5.27 at 366 pounds.
See, that's wild. Like, speaking of the heavy guys, and he obviously would not qualify for this, when I watch the offensive linemen, okay, the offensive linemen run, now, some of those guys don't get out of the gate very fast.
No.
It's like, sugar. Now I'm running top speed, whatever that might be. So I think that drill, you'll have to tell me how that's significant. But as I'm watching most of these, I'm thinking, why do they want to see this? Why do the NFL teams want to see this? I think they want to see, are you a world-class athlete at your position?
Yeah.
Are you an NFL best-in-class type of athlete, regardless of whether you do the football stuff well? We know the tape. We've seen you play. We've got all that. And, yes, that's the most important. But we still want to know how you fit in with the other guys as an athlete, because this plus this equals first-round draft choice, right? If one of those is a little off – okay, we're not going to elevate you to that round on our board. We're going to put you a little bit down, but you might still be a great NFL player. You could be. But I think they want to see, am I right about this? They want to see where you measure up as an NFL best-in-class athlete.
Yeah, and I think if you, say you change the 40-yard dash, because I know there was a lot of talk about that during the broadcast, like, hey, shouldn't the offensive lineman just do like a 20?
Yeah.
Then it becomes, for the scouts and the GMs, it kind of becomes a tough basis of comparison, because you like to have that basis of comparison if you're sitting in the room and you're like, hey, this guy reminds me of such and such. You know, he was, wide receiver, for instance. Hey, this guy reminds me of DeAndre Hopkins. He's got the hands. He's got this. And, you know, he's a 4.5, 4.6 guy like Hop, but he didn't really need to be that speedy. That's kind of who I compare him to. Then he runs, and he runs 4.5, 4.6, and you're like, okay, it just kind of bolsters the argument that a guy maybe compares to another guy that way. But all of a sudden, if you change it, especially for the, you know, if you change it for the receivers, but I think the receivers probably need to do it. Running backs need to do it. I don't think the big guys need to do it. I think it's more about that burst, and that's what it's gotten to be. Okay, you're going to run the 40. What really matters is the 10.
Yeah.
You know, what's your 10-yard split? I think there are some other things that they can start timing. Like, when I see the defensive ends do that hoop drill, you see a hoop drill, they put down these two big hula hoops. It looks like a figure eight, but they separate the hoops a little bit. And you start on one end, and you run around, and you pick up a towel. And then you drop it, and you go around the other side, pick up a towel. It simulates bend, you know, how you bend, and then how you can accelerate through, you know a bend, like you're ripping underneath the sack. Von Miller would have crushed a drill. Man, you could time that drill. I'm telling you, you could learn a little something about edge rushers. There are probably some drills that they could change and make it a little bit more, I'll say, user-friendly. I don't know if the user-friendly is the right word, but comparison-friendly.
But the 40, Johnny, for O-linemen.
There are like five of them that tweak hamstrings.
Most of the snaps, they're dropping back. I mean, not dropping back. They're standing up and getting into coverage immediately.
Right.
I mean, pass protection immediately.
Correct.
And you need to know how they're going to do in that category.
Right.
Are they going to false start or not? Let's have the false start drill. Hut, 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 hut.
Are you sure you want to do that?
I don't know.
I think it's important, though. False start drill. They've changed some of the linemen, like movement drills, and I feel like they get more out of that now. They did some. The one thing they really added is they've added like a pulling drill. Like a pulling movement skill, which is good.
Yeah, that's
so good. They're doing like three or four different movement skills, which are good, which obviously teams get a chance to watch, whether it's on hand. I saw Mike Devlin in a Chargers uniform taking snaps, or Chargers coaching polo taking snaps. And
he's a combine stalwart.
Yeah. I saw Gerard there. I saw Gerard on TV, and I was kind of like, Gerard, why are you there, bro? we don't need quarterbacks. You asked me about quarterbacks earlier.
Yeah.
And the top three guys didn't throw. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May didn't throw. Jaden Daniels wasn't even there. Jaden Daniels took off. Like, I have no measurement on Jaden Daniels, which, by the way, to Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, I know he lives in the Houston area. I don't know if he's listening, but that's where I get all my measurements from because Charles is so reliable. Thank you. I mean, thank you. He has them all, 318. So I went back and I looked and I was like, on my database, I can look at, okay, who I've got, who I don't. And I'm like, I don't have anything for Jaden Daniels. I'm searching.
So he didn't weigh in?
I guess not. Didn't measure, didn't do anything.
But he's got a pro day coming up.
He's got a pro day coming up, but I think it's not until the 20th or
something. You have to allow yourself to be measured, weighed.
Well,
I mean, you have to. How tall are you? How heavy are you?
He didn't.
At your pro day, at least.
Well, I mean, I've seen guys. I've seen guys with my own eyes. Ed Oliver. Not even call him out. Just Ed Oliver. At pro day, they had this like big column, like square column, and on one side of the column they had the measurement for your height.
Yep.
So guys would walk up there, and then on the other side of the column they had the scale.
Yeah,
and Ed Oliver, I don't know, Ed Oliver, defensive tackle. They call him up, walked right past the measurement, right past the scale, and on out to the field to do his workout. He'd done it at the combine, and I don't know. I thought he was taller and heavier than he was going to be, and he just walked right past it.
Yeah.
So,
and he's still playing.
These guys are kind of, I don't want to say they're playing with kind of their own rules, but, you know, a lot of people at the combine were, wait a second, Caleb Williams isn't going to allow all these other teams to do medicals on him. And in all honesty, he's probably right. For Caleb Williams, who knows he's going into top three picks, why would you let 32 teams tug at you, go through this, go through that? You're going to go take 30 visits, go on campus, do the medical there, let them do a thorough thing. When you're there, get a good feel for the training staff while you're there. I didn't have any problem with that.
But I think you got to get the universal across the board stuff. Jeff Kaplan's on the show later on.
Right, right. We're going to have Jeff Kaplan
Director later. Of Medical Administration for the Houston Texans. And he talks about, hey, a lot of these guys have not been examined to the extent that they're going to do it. EKGs, things like that. They find stuff, right? They've done that historically.
Absolutely. And look, is every player afforded what Caleb Williams did and just said, no, not every player is going to be afforded that. But I will say, Caleb Williams stuck around all day Saturday, all day, till the last guy was done. He was there. He did a really, he loves sour candy, apparently. And so they did this thing with this woman on NFL Network just testing sour candy. And I came out of there, I've always liked him. I came out of there thinking, man, I like this guy a lot. I think he's relatable. I think there's just been so much noise about him. But Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers weren't even in Indianapolis on Saturday when the quarterbacks and wide receivers were working out.
That's amazing.
They weren't even there.
Where are you? What are you doing?
I don't know. I it made no sense. But quarterbacks, look, nobody's going to throw like CJ. Nobody. But I thought Penix threw well. I was watching Washington, Texas, and watching Penix again, and I'm like, man, I really like this guy. I know that's music to the ears of our friend Andre Ware. He loves Penix. Penix is going to end up somewhere. I hope Penix ends up somewhere with a good offensive staff. I got the place. I know the exact place I want him to go. I don't know about the offensive staff because it's now changing, but I think it's going to be good. It's going to be a Kubiak in charge, and that's New Orleans. And I don't know that Derek Carr is long for New Orleans, but I could see Penix getting in New Orleans system, sitting for a year, taking over the second year. Boy, he'd be really fun to watch in a Kubiak system. I thought he threw it well. Knicks threw it okay. Joe Milton threw it 8,000 yards with the long ball.
That was fun. The long ball montage was great.
And people freaking out on Twitter. Our buddy Lance Zierlein posted the video. He was down on the field. He posted a video of that throw, and they're like, what does that prove? Like, have some fun, people. Like, he threw it 70-something yards in the air.
Yeah, it's cool.
Relax. Yeah. It's really, really cool.
It's just, what are we here for? Where, you know, it's not just about the evaluation.
Right.
If you're watching the combine, you want to be entertained, too.
Yeah, relax,
and that was Milton was entertaining. Good for him, because Hendon Hooker comes out last year. He's injured, can't do anything. Here's Milton doing his thing out of the University of Tennessee, and I don't know where he gets picked, but he's got a big gun. That's a big arm right there.
Huge arm. I came out of there, last thing about the combine, Mark. I came out of there thinking there are plenty of quarterbacks. There are boatloads of wide receivers.
Good.
Boatloads of wide receivers.
Good, because Mike Evans is unavailable, fans.
That's right. Mike Evans signs a two-year, $52 million deal to stay with Tampa Bay. The offensive line tackle position is as good as I've seen it. In the corners, there's not a Stingley, there's not a Sauce, but it is about 15 to 17 guys that, John, would you like this guy? Yep. Would you like this guy? Yep. About 15 to 17 that I'm like, I like all those guys. And that's going to help too, because we don't know what's going to be opposite Stingley, whether it's going to be Steven Nelson coming back or a rookie or a signee in free agency. Those positions, quarterback, wide receiver, tackle, corner, the four priority positions. Texans have a guy at each one of those. CJ, Titus and Laramie, Nico and Tank, Stingley. Do you have enough? I don't know. Do you need another corner? Potentially. But at least you have them at those positions. I'm telling you, in this draft, this is going to be an offensive draft. Quarterback, wide receiver, tackle. The night one, it is going to be offense, 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 which brings me back to last year, sitting at pick number three, the Texans debating whether they're going to trade up. Could you get a Will Anderson Jr. in this draft? Very easy answer is no. Not at all.
Mm.
So you gave up the 27th pick in this draft for Will Anderson starting last year. Smart move? I think so.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, think so.
Again, you paid the premium to move up for a premium player.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yep.
You paid extra, of course, meaning in draft capital,
correct,
to get a top flight player so far, so very good, defensive rookie of the year. And you know he's only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
How banged up was he in the back third, fourth of the season?
Exactly.
A lot. He gets mended, has a full off season as a pro. Let's go in his sophomore year.
He couldn't even walk against Tennessee in a game New Year's Eve day. Couldn't even walk, and he had back-to-back sacks that shut down a drive before half.
He didn't practice at the end. He had a ski boot on his foot.
Exactly. Wait for 2024. All right, a guy that we love, Sal Capaccio, our good friend from Buffalo, sideline reporter from Buffalo, host on WGR. We sat down with him at the Combine. Great stuff from Sal coming up next right here in Texans All Access. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this Monday edition of Texans All Access from the Hunted Texans Radio Studio. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter. It's time to catch up with one of my good friends. He's a guy that's gotten to know Mark really well at the owner's meeting. Sal Capaccio, sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills. Lots to talk about with him, including, man, got a pacemaker. Yeah, a pacemaker. We'll get into all that right here with Sal Capaccio.
I asked you this question, I think, 2 years ago, and I'm going to ask you again. Josh Allen, at the time I said, Jim Kelly's his beloved quarterback, went to four Super Bowls. Said, how is the comparison between Josh Allen and Jim Kelly in fan love? On the fan love meter, has the fan love meter changed for Josh Allen at all over the last couple of years? Or is it the same or better than ever? Where would you gauge that right now?
Fans love Josh Allen. But if you want to compare to Jim Kelly, that might literally depend on what age you are. I mean,
okay.
I mean, let's, right. I mean, if you are people who are 60s, 70 years old, and Jim Kelly. I mean, these are also people who told you how great Jack Kemp was.
Right.
I mean, let's remember.
How about Joe Ferguson?
I love Joe Ferguson, 1980s, right? He was my first quarterback growing up. But, you know, Josh hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl, and that's what you'll hear from that crowd. Mm-hmm. It's the same people who call One Bills Live or sitting right next to you guys and tell Steve Tasker, Steve, you are the greatest. I watched you play every single game of your career. Because we all know Steve is the greatest, and we all watched him play.
Right.
But if you're a new generation Bills fan, Josh Allen, I mean, the love for him is tremendous. And, guys, I have to tell you, it's not just the talent and how great he is. He truly fits our city for what he does off the field.
Yeah.
He is very involved with the Oshai Children's Hospital, and he has a fund there in honor of his mom, the Patricia Allen Fund. He does so much. He's a California kid, but he's not an L.A. kid. He's a northern farm California
kid.
That's
a different type of kid.
That's right. Didn't have a scholarship coming out. Wanted to go to Fresno State. They rejected him. He's worked for everything. He's a blue-collar guy like us. So he fits the city. Fans love him. No one's going to say they need a new quarterback. But you will get an older generation of fans who go, well, Jim Kelly went to 4 Super Bowls.
Yeah, which is something.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's some 4 straight. And they beat the Oilers at some point. So. So how do you get over the hump? And I know this is something you probably get asked and you think about all the time. I know we think about the Texans. Like, what do we got to do? Like, I'm sending him, you know, I sent Mark an email the other day. I went free agent shopping. I sent him like a 15-point, like, I did this. I signed this guy. I re-signed this guy. I did all this. I know you get asked this a lot. The Bills kind of in the window seemingly because of Josh. What's it going to take in your mind? How do they improve this team? How do they get over the hump to get to the AFC Championship game, to get to the Super Bowl, to win a Super Bowl?
Well, it's really just the Kansas City Chiefs standing in their way. Now, I do know they lost to the Bengals last year. We all know after the DeMar situation, the team was running on fumes, and who knows what happens, right? But it's the Kansas City Chiefs. And let's remember, the Bills have beaten the Chiefs 3 straight years in the regular season.
Right.
And then 2 out of the last 3 years, they go to Kansas City. 3 out of the last 4, they lose in the playoffs. But every one of those last 2 playoff games, 13 seconds left, and then at the end of this year, they're right there. And to me, it's really just about making those 1 or 2 critical plays in the fourth quarter, which the Chiefs have made and the Bills haven't. You're on the sidelines, I'm on the sidelines. You get a feel for the energy, right?
Right.
We mainly stay on our team sidelines. I was just talking with Aditi Kinkawabwa. She was doing the game against the Chiefs for Westwood One, and she told me she could feel a different demeanor once the fourth quarter hit between the Chiefs and the Bills, and how the Chiefs were much more relaxed.
Yeah.
And the Bills are more like, okay, let's make a play. Here we go. We've been down this road.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You got to make that one play to win that one time, guys. I think that's what it comes down to. You go back to the game in Houston. It's Josh Allen, the Bills, they're on the scene, but they blew that lead, 19 points or whatever it was, 16 points. And then Deshaun makes the play late. It all goes back to that. They have not made those critical plays near the ends of games, 13 seconds against Kansas City. They have to do that. And I don't know what the answer there is.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs catching a ball.
Yeah.
Is Tyler Bass making a kick, making a tackle on Travis Kelce or bumping him off the line? That's what it comes down to, but it's sports. I don't know how you make that one play.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sal Capaccio joining us, sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills, talk show host on WGR in Western New York, and I know it's called Western New York, not upstate New York.
Yeah.
Ken Dorsey, how's he going to do in Cleveland? How's Joe Brady? I read that obviously Sean McDermott is saying he's excited about Joe Brady.
Yeah.
Full year, off season, get ready for the 2024 campaign. But what about that dynamic of making that change during the season? Why was it necessary? What was different?
You know, you guys were just talking about Josh, and Josh was different. Hmm. You know, under Ken Dorsey is a very smart man, very smart. And you watched him at Miami. Were you calling his games?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, he's my guy, and this is why it's heartbreaking for me.
Case
but,
guy.
You know,
okay,
I
you tell me. I'm going to ask you this, okay, because I don't want to say this in a demeaning way.
No, it's
but
fine.
We're super energetic people.
Yeah.
That's not Ken Dorsey. Ken Dorsey is a very low-key, kind of straight-ahead, in-a-box guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was fitting in Buffalo and how things were working with the dynamic. Sean McDermott used the word energy a lot when he made the change. We need more energy. We were wondering if, like, what was wrong with Josh Allen for 6 weeks? Like, dude, you just don't seem like you're having fun.
Yeah.
And I don't want to blame Ken Dorsey. He's doing his job the best way he can do it, and that might fit somewhere. But I think in Buffalo, they needed that. Let's go, Joe Brady. He's here, up-tempo, every day. Everything's cool and fun, and it doesn't mean that you're not doing your job.
Right.
But Dorsey's all about work, work, work. And, yes, those guys might be too, but it's with a different energy, different communication. I think that's why it didn't work in a lot of ways. And the other thing was, things we heard kind of after the fact were, you know, Dorsey put a lot on the table, and it was more about they got to stop what we do best, not we're going to see what they do and counter that.
Yeah.
You know, and
capitalize.
And I think there's something. Joe Brady was taking advantage of what defenses were doing in game planning. Hey, We see what the Eagles are doing. Here's a play that'll work. Dorsey was more like, I don't really care what they're doing. Not that he wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But we're going to do what we do because you have to stop us.
Yeah.
And I don't even do that in the NFL these days.
Having said all that, I'm wondering why they decided to replace Alex Van Pelt with him in Cleveland. Because what you're describing to me sounds more like Stefanski, you know, kind of low-key but very analytical and very smart. And Van Pelt seemed to be the team guy, and he was getting everybody together. And obviously they had great results with the four or five quarterbacks they used. So we'll see how it all goes.
I wonder if it's because, you know, Stefanski's calling the plays, right? I mean, so Dorsey, he'll be there for a lot of that stuff he can help with, but he's not the one actually
driving it.
Driving it, exactly.
Yeah. Sal, Bills, the Texans are sitting in a different situation. Still a younger team, younger core. Rookie quarterback on a rookie contract, a lot of cap room. Bills, veteran team, don't have a lot of cap space, if any. In fact, probably got to make
$40 million over.
What do they do? What do they do? And then how do they go shopping with whatever money they have left? And what do they look at in the draft? How do the Bills get to a different level from that standpoint?
Well, Brandon Bean doesn't love to do it, but he will. He will restructure contracts, and he will take, you know, base salary, convert it to signing bonuses.
Yep.
Josh Allen, one strike of the pen, you're going to basically save about $20 million. Now you got $20 million more to go. You got a couple other guys you can do that with, maybe Stephon Diggs, Von Miller, some high contracts. You can add void years. They got guys like Deion Dawkins you can extend. But everything you do is going to push that money down the road, as you know. That's how you get in what we call cap hell.
Sure.
The Bills have said, and they've been consistent on this, as long as Brandon Bean, he says, as long as I'm here and we have Josh Allen, we're going to try and go for it every year.
Yep.
We'd be doing a disservice if we didn't do that.
Sure.
So they'll keep doing kind of a little bit what the Saints do all the time, which is really kind of extending it out. Keep kicking it. They'll find a way. They'll get under the cap enough. We all thought they had no money a couple years ago. They signed Von Miller to $20 million. You find money when you need to find money. So what do they need to do, though? They have 10 draft picks, guys. It's a very critical draft. They got to get cheaper labor. The Chiefs did it. The Chiefs were able to get cheap labor. They drafted young players on rookie contracts to offset those high-priced guys. The Bills have to be able to do that. It does not help when you draft Kyrie Elam in the first round. He can't get on the field in 2 years. That kind of thing matters, right?
It's killer.
A guy like John Butler was a secondary coach. Now he was in Houston, right? Now he's left. And I think some of that might have been, hey, we drafted Kyrie as great as you did with other guys. We need this guy to hit, right? And he wanted the defensive coordinator job. He didn't get it. But that's how much it matters to an organization to hit on these draft picks. They got to look at wide receiver. Gabe Davis is going to be a free agent. I don't think he's back. Stephon Diggs had a big tail off in production last year, but the Bills are very resolute that he's still a number one, but they keep saying we got to get help around him.
Yep.
They need explosive plays. They got a guy who can throw the ball from here to Bloomington, right? I mean, but yet last year, 19th in the league in 20-plus yard plays down the field in passing.
Ooh. Gabe Davis.
In my mock draft, I gave you guys Troy Franklin from Oregon.
Love it.
He would fit absolutely perfectly in that offense. I love Shakir. I love what he gives you. But it'll be 80 catches for 960 yards.
Yep.
And a few touchdowns. And you know what you get with Diggs. Troy Franklin's going to catch 50 passes for 1,200 yards and just be a guy down the field. He's going to be their Will. He is going to be the Will Fuller for you guys. And I think this wide receiver draft is so good for you guys that even if you didn't do that at 28, you could get another one like that at 50, whatever you have in the second round.
And I know
it would be incredible.
Think about it, the wide receivers are kind of like the new quarterback. These astronomical salaries. There's Justin Jefferson. They're talking about the kind of money he's going to make. You got to get these guys in rookie contracts. What's really the difference between a 5th-year guy and a 1st-year guy, the way these guys can play these days coming into the league, right?
Exactly.
The good ones, yes.
Yes.
The good ones. And Sal, tell me, Gabe Davis, let me free agent shop here.
Yeah.
How would he fit for the Houston Texans as a complimentary player? You already have Nico Collins, 1,300 yards almost, and Tank Dell, explosive guy. Couldn't finish the season, though, due to injury. What about Gabe Davis, how he fits in places, maybe Houston as a free agent?
So you use the word complimentary. Let me ask you this. He wouldn't be the number one, right?
Right.
Wouldn't be asked to. That's good. He's not a number one wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Bills fans even say he's a number three. He's a number two wide. Look at his numbers. It's comparable to a lot of the twos in the league. But most teams these days have these guys, twos and threes, that can get there. So Gabe is not a burner, but he separates down the field. He's a long strider, and he can get down the field a little bit. It's been a bit inconsistent catching the ball. That's the biggest knock on him from Bills fans. Drops, inconsistencies, catching the ball at times. He's not a rack guy. He's not going to catch the ball and take it to the house. That's not his game. But he's a big body, and he's an amazing run blocker. If you want to help out in the run game, the guy never comes off the field. You know,
UCF. UCF had a motto, no block, no rock.
That's right. Listen, 90 to 95% every game snaps for Gabe Davis. It's incredible. Stephon Diggs doesn't play that. He's on the field all the time. But here's what you'd love if you went to Houston. Fourth year, 25 years old, 26 years old, captain, won the hardest worker in the offseason 2 years in a row from the Buffalo Bills organization. Him and his trainer, Bert, is his name. I'm going to give him a shout-out. Does a great job. They just opened a gym in Orlando near UCF. They work with guys that come here to the Combine. They're down there all the time. They are workers. They are trainers. They love being in the gym. They're gym rats, and that's Gabe Davis and what he's going
to
do for you.
Oh, I'm saving this audio if he happens to come to Houston.
That's been a name talked about in Houston for a while, is Gabe Davis. And you just look at the age, you look at size, look at the numbers he's had in playoff games, and you're like, hey, he doesn't need to be the number one. I mean –
Well, yeah, because you have guys on the roster. Sal, I want to talk to you about this. Sal Capaccio, sideline reporter for the Buffalo Bills and sports talk show host in Western New York. You had a health issue.
Yeah.
And this applies to a lot of people. So pacemaker? Tell me about this.
Yeah, so, you know, you think about a pacemaker. You think about, oh, my God, old heart condition, old person, right? I mean, that's what I thought. I have my heart. Let me start with this. My heart is perfectly strong and healthy, very strong and healthy. But I have a condition that I've been passing out frequently since I was a teenager. Frequently. I mean, probably about good 8-9 times since I was a teenager. Started when I was in high school a couple of times, and people were like, oh, he passed out. It happens, right? As I got older, it happened. In the last 4 years, four or five years, I've passed out 3 different times. Twice I hit my head pretty severely and once had to go to the ER.
Yeah.
And they said, look, you hit your head the wrong way.
Right. You pass out, you fall down, you have no recovery.
You guys remember Fred Smirlis, old nose tackle?
Yeah,
for the Bills. He owns a restaurant in Rhode Island. A few years ago, John Murphy, myself, the radio crew, we were eating. I didn't feel that right well afterwards. We ate at Fred's restaurant. I said, I'm going to go into the bathroom. I put some water on my face, still didn't feel right. Sat down in a toilet just to relax. Woke up in a pool of blood. Hit my head on a toilet paper dispenser.
Oh.
Okay? A couple years ago inside the Bills stadium, very hot day, open practice. Just kind of felt a little off. Passed out in the tunnel right by the end zone where you walk out.
Yep.
Team doctors all on top of me. Like, then that's when they said, you need a pacemaker. And I'm like, I'm 47 at the time. What are you talking about? No. You have this condition, neurocardiosyncope. Well, what happened, guys? The cardiologist said to me, I know you're going to say no. You're going to be back in my office because something bad's going to happen. I'm just telling you, everybody does. Sure as heck, last October, right before the Bills played the Dolphins, I'm downtown at night doing an event outside a hotel. Didn't feel right. Fell down, hit my head on the concrete, had to be rushed to the hospital. They said, you could have died if you hit your head in the wrong spot.
Sure.
So I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get a pacemaker. So this is a condition that really is just about communication between my head and my heart. When you get lightheaded, most people do. This is a good thing to know for people out there because some people might have this condition and not know. Most people, when you get a little bit lightheaded, your heart recognizes and just starts pumping harder. It's
right.
A circular system of blood. It goes heart to head to heart to head. Mine doesn't. It just doesn't recognize it. The pacemaker is set to a point where if my heart rate drops below 60, it just starts pumping a little bit more, pushes that blood up. I won't pass out anymore.
No, it recognizes the heart rate and then triggers it to pump even more.
And so most people, if you ever have a heart attack and get a pacemaker, your pacemaker is always working to make sure that you're living and it's pumping. Mm-hmm. Mine will only kick on if my heart rate actually goes below 60 because my blood flow starts to drop a little bit. Otherwise, it doesn't even need to kick on. I have a little device that sits near my bed at night. It downloads all the data, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, I can see what my heart rate was during the night. My cardiologist will have an alert if something was wrong. But, yeah, it's technology is amazing these days.
Well, wow. And to paint the picture here, we're talking to Sal. He's thin. You could not be in better shape. I mean, you're in great shape.
Thank you.
And this has nothing to do with that.
Nothing. And here's
J.J. Watt. What did J.J. Watt
J.J. had a heart arrhythmia.
Yeah. That's right. And here's the other thing, which is amazing. So for the next 6 weeks, I can't lift my left arm over my shoulder because there's wires that the heart literally has to grow around the wires, and you don't want to stretch the wires out.
How do you prevent yourself from?
I
wear a sling at night in case sleeping. I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise,
oh, yeah.
I just have to kind of be cognizant. My son had hockey practice the other day. He scored a goal. I lifted my arms up and said, crap.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
But after 6 weeks, guys, this is how much technology is incredible. They said, yeah, you basically live your life like you have no pacemaker. I play flag football. They're like, you can play flag football. It doesn't matter.
Really?
You can do whatever.
6 weeks after surgery, you can go back and you can
do whatever I want.
How big is it? Because I remember seeing them, and they're pretty big. They're like a stopwatch.
No, I would say depends on how you think big, but it's about a
Can see it through your chest.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a it's about a size of a half dollar.
Yeah.
But it's a little thicker.
We can see it through his shirt, ladies and gentlemen. He's just given the 3D image.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
And I can't go through metal detectors anymore, though. So when I –
That could be a good thing.
Well, when I go on the road, I actually had to talk with the Bills yesterday. I saw PR, and I'm like, hey, when we go on the road, like, I can't go through the metal detector when the bus pulls into the stadium.
Yeah.
So these are little things I got to think of.
You have airport security, stadium security, you have all of it.
Yeah, I have a
card. Can you be near a microwave? I've always heard, like, being near a microwave. Like,
it's funny you say that. The actual – they said that's a old wives' tale.
Really?
You can now. I was told, hey, you can be on your cell phone. Just don't put it in your jacket pocket.
Oh, leave it there.
Oh, yeah. I might forget that. That's
You'd
not
forget
good.
That all the time because it's just, you know, just drop it in there.
I know.
So, wait, you can't go through the metal detector?
Cannot.
It'll do something bad to it?
It'll basically, yeah. And look, if I really went through once or twice, I don't think it's an issue. But you never want to, the more you do that, it's kind of, it's magnetic, basically, right? So.
Yeah.
I have to tell people, hey, I come here to Indy. I have a pacemaker.
And don't drive an electric vehicle. And never mind.
Right.
Sal, it's so great to visit with you. We look forward to seeing you when the Bills come visiting this season.
And we're going for barbecue. We're definitely going to hook it up.
Oh, that's one more thing. So you took us out in Buffalo, and I wanted to say this. You were the greatest host because you took us out to a restaurant, great ice cream place. You took us out to the one restaurant that ran out of wings night.
But
that's okay. Give me one other food that Buffalo is known for or that's good in Buffalo other than wings. That's authentically Buffalo.
This is.
What is it?
Beef on weck.
Yeah.
It's a Kimmelweck roll. It's a salted roll. Mm-hmm. And it's got roast beef on it and au jus sauce that you dip it into.
Oh,
it's called beef on weck.
Yeah.
Not wick. Don't say beef on wick.
Yeah.
People say that. Even my stepdad says it.
It's right? weck.
W-E-C-K. Beef on weck. Kimmelweck.
Right. Okay.
That's the roll. Kimmelweck.
It's a vegan thing.
It's funny because you get animated talking about it, but I'm like, you know, if somebody starts calling our barbecue like Sloppy Joe's, I'm like, no. That's not barbecue. Like, I start getting, beef on weck. Absolutely.
And I promise the next place I take you will not run out of wings because – That should never happen where
it's
I take
right.
anybody in Buffalo.
Last one. How's your last place baseball team going to do this year?
Oh, my God, this guy.
Wait, who's he a fan of?
I'm a Yankee fan, last place.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, how are the Orioles not favored to win the East?
Yeah,
the
that's weird.
The Orioles are, they are really, really looking good.
Yeah, they're young and up and coming, too, you would think.
Who's favored?
The Yankees to win the East.
What? Because they're just the Yankees.
Yes, and they have Juan Soto now, and I get it, but come on.
Everybody's setting them up for the big fail.
That's
what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
Sal, thanks a lot.
All right, guys, thanks.
That's my dude, Sal Capaccio. And Mark had said before we got started, man, he is the mayor of that town. There's no doubt. They love him in Buffalo, and I love him, man. We got to know each other at the 2015 Combine. Stayed in contact ever since. The pacemaker story is absolutely incredible. Sal's, PSA to everybody out there. If you start feeling something, make sure you go say something because you never know. He didn't want to do it. Found out, you know what? Hey, this is a better way to live. And I think I made his wife and his son, Max, very, very happy. So good stuff from Sal Capaccio. Great stuff coming from Jeff Kaplan. Mark previewed it a little bit earlier when he said we were going to have this on. At the Combine, the medical staffs are as important as any group that's going to be in Indianapolis. Jeff Kaplan talked with Drew Doherty about what the week is like for him. That's next on Texans All Access. I get asked this question a lot, especially when I'm going to the Combine. Well, what do you guys do at the Combine? I'm like, for us, it's easy. We just talk to all of our pals in the media and talk about their teams, what's upcoming. We get to see the prospects, interview, that kind of stuff. But the most important people at the Combine are the medical professionals. Jeff Kaplan's been going to the Combine for a long time. And he gave us a little peek behind the curtain as to what they do on a daily basis with everything going on at the Combine.
What is a typical day at the Combine like for you, Jeff?
A typical day at the Combine is we meet at Starbucks at 6:30 a.m. as soon as Starbucks opens, make our way over to Lucas Oil Stadium by 7:15, 7:30, get ready for physicals that start at 8 a.m. We're usually down doing physicals from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 4:30. Then we regroup in the evenings and between the athletic trainers in the NFL and the physicians in the NFL, there's a continuing education program every night, so we usually get done around 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Some people might say physicals. I mean, these guys are throwing footballs and blocking and tackling, but the physicals are probably the most important part of the job, part of the job interview, right?
Yeah, I think we take the stand as we want to make sure that all players are physically fit. A lot of players in their football career have never even had an EKG, so it's just really hard. So what we try to do is give them the most comprehensive physical of their life.
Talking with Houston Texans Executive Director of Player Health, Jeff Kaplan.
How stressful do you think that can be for a player?
I think any time you go on a job interview, it's stressful for anybody, especially when you really want your job. And coming to the NFL Combine, it's just like being on a job interview. And if you really want to be good at what you want to do and you really want to get a good job, then I think you can put a lot of stress on yourself. But I think most of the players handle it really well. We try to make it a very welcoming situation, and we try to just cater to all their needs.
Yeah, and most of these guys are handling it so well because they've been through so much and they're the best at what they do. It's kind of goes hand in hand, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and I would say most of the players that come to the NFL Combine, they've worked with athletic trainers. They've worked with physicians throughout their career. They know the medical process. They understand it because they've been in their athletic training rooms their whole college career. So they're used to working with people. I don't think a lot of it's foreign to them.
How many of these have you done? How many of these have you been to?
That's funny you said. I was thinking about that on my way over here. At least 25, maybe 27. This is maybe my 27th.
And it changes and progresses and gets different each year, doesn't it?
Yeah, I would say there's a big emphasis on the player experience and making sure the players get a first-class experience from the time they land in Indy to the time they leave. And that involves the physicals, that involves their experience with the teams, that involves interviews, that involves everything they have to do. I know that the NFL and the people here in Indianapolis that run the Combine have worked really hard at making it a first-class experience for everyone.
Talking with Houston Texans Executive Director of Player Health, Jeff Kaplan.
Tell me about your interaction, your collaboration with Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans when you're going through this Combine experience.
So I think our job at the Combine is to gather information. We come up here, we gather information. Then our work really starts when we get back to Houston. And it becomes a very collaborative program and a very collaborative model. Nick and D'Amico have really demanded a collaborative approach to everything we do at NRG Stadium. And this is just a small example of it when we're getting ready for the draft. It's a collaborative approach between Nick, D'Amico, the coaches, the scouts, and the medical staff, as well as the performance team. It's a very important collaborative approach.
Well, something that maybe I haven't asked you that probably needs to get out there, people ought to know about.
I think that the people here on the medical side really care about the players, and we really care about making it a first-class experience. And we try to treat them that way.
Man, it's great stuff. Appreciate Jeff for stopping by. Of course, Drew, my man Sal Capaccio, stopping in with his pacemaker and talking about his Yankees a little bit. And, of course, Mark Vandermeer and you guys for listening. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. And as always, go Texans.